This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonder Water. What makes Bai so great? It's simple. From Raspberry Lemon Lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing Cherry and Palavo Pineapple Mango, Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
Good evening, everybody. Andy's little singing intro put me off as usual.
It's like Slash.
never fails. It is the Fallen. It is the Day Trippers. It is a Monday night. It is the Monday after the first weekend of the new football season, and it was a weekend which just left you wanting more, but we're going to have to wait now and all the way through until Saturday, 12:30 for the Reds' next game. In fact, the next Premier League game seems like a bit of a mad one to have to wait almost a whole week. But tonight, we've got a top crew. We've got right at the top above me is the toppest of top Reds, Andy Young. How are you doing?
Yeah, feeling top.
Feeling on top of the world.
Yeah.
And then next to me, as you see it on my right hand side, we've got Steve-O Daly. How are you doing, Steve-O?
Evening, Ray. Great, mate. Looking forward to this. The highlight of my day.
Excellent. Good. I can well believe
it. And he's going to, as soon as he finishes, he's just going to slip down into bed.
there you go. Multi-pair.
That's it.
And then we've got also in Barcelona, we have got Pete Smith from the most bankrupt club capital of the world. How are you doing, Pete?
Absolutely, absolutely delighted. Nice to see Barcelona suffer and Liverpool get off to a phenomenal start.
Evening. Yeah.
You want to be careful of locals downstairs smashing your windows in.
Let them. Yeah. They can't, they wouldn't be able to pay for that anyway.
Your scouts cunt with money.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'd say love owners like FSG. What do you think?
They'd love owners like FSG.
They'd die for them.
They would absolutely hate them.
Why?
They would hate. Because they live for being part of the bourgeois and having this false sense of fucking superiority about themselves. They're a fucking nothing club that until 10 years ago had won European Cup in fucking 60 years. Bunch of pricks, a lot of them.
I like Steve. I like this fella already. Can we keep him?
Yeah.
Steve, let me there's clubs. I'll finish it on this. There's clubs in the Leinster Senior League that can register all their players. Barcelona can't because they're piss poor.
There's clubs in the fucking Leinster Senior League with more history than Barcelona as well. Bunch of cunts. Anyway.
Well, there you go.
You know, that's how the language gets us banned off YouTube. Yeah. So,
Does it?
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
You could have given me that shout before we started or the other 20 pods I've done in the last year or 2 years or whatever else. I used to say that every single week I was on. What's the story? Is this new YouTube police? Is it?
It's just
the
new.
We've gone higher up the tree. I think in YouTube land, Steve-O, since you were last on.
So could somebody send me
a new level?
That those extra 14 subscribers must have tipped us over the edge, did it?
we have a lot more than that, Steve-O. This is the amateur pod we were running back in the day.
Hang on, Andy. I didn't say we have 14 subscribers. I said we've an extra 14 since I was last on.
Oh.
Yeah.
So look,
we're
going to do the usual four topics. Barcelona wasn't one of the topics, so we've just kind of snuck that in there, really, and we've absolutely...
Bonus topic for free.
Boom. Yeah. See, weren't even charged for it. Not even behind the paywall.
So we're going to go through four topics as usual. We're going to get Andy on his soapbox to tell us all that the fun is back. We're going to then move on to squad depth, and Steve-O's going to give us his views on the Liverpool squad. I will have a discussion, which I'm sure plenty will enjoy, around why Liverpool are winning the league this season, despite some people actually ruling us out, not just of winning the league, but of finishing top four, which is a mad shout. And then Pete is going to touch on a topic that has been in the news over the weekend around homophobic chants, and we'll get into a little bit of that towards the back end of the podcast. So, Andy, we'll start with you. The fun is back. We've seen plenty of fun being back in the Camden, in Dublin, Centre on Saturday evening. There was a good turn out of the day watch Liverpool kick off the season. There were still a few Leeds fans floating around from the earlier kickoff who were still having fun despite taking an absolute bashing.
They were plastered.
couldn't stand up straight, really struggling by the time we got to sort of 7, 8 o'clock. Fair play to them for lasting the day out despite that result. But the fun was back, good selection of trippers, and we've seen Liverpool win handily 3-0. But I think there's a bit more to it than that, isn't there, Andy?
Yeah, look, the Camden was great. We were about 10 trippers strong, so anyone who was allowed out, who could get permission off their wives was there, so that was great to see. I wanted to just cover this. Like, we spent a lot of time whinging over different things over the last 6 months, so I just wanted to celebrate the fact that the fun is in fact back. I love that Klopp is smiling, his teeth are even more lovely, he looks reborn without the glasses, looks fresh as a daisy, ready for a title challenge after such a difficult year for him. You know, it seems like it's behind him. So I think that the fun is back there. I love that the travelling cop is back. The boys listen to him belt out the Bobby song. The pictures when they're, you know, celebrating the goals. The Mo song. And the scenes from the concourse singing the He's Our Centre-Half song. I love that the team looks themselves again. The familiar shape, Virgil spraying balls left and right to Mo, Trent, Mane and Tsimikas. Getting on the ball and pulling teams all over the place. I love that Trent is back playing fullback from a number 10 position and Tsimikas is doing his best Robbo impression possible. I love that Mane, Mo and Bobby are pissing themselves laughing again after scoring goals. We spent the whole last season trying to work out what was wrong with these boys. We knew they weren't themselves and nobody looked happy. It was probably a whole collection of things we tried to work out through all of the pods last season, but whatever it was, it looks fixed now. This team looks ready to go again. They look fresh, they look hungry, and more than anything, it looks like the fun is back up the Reds. So I just want to talk about how much fun Saturday was, how much fun the last couple of games of pre-season were, and how much fun we're going to have this season. Because that's what it's all about. All this empty grounds shite is behind us now. And I'm looking forward to it.
3,000 Liverpool fans had the privilege of going there at the weekend. It's going to be significantly more, almost 60,000 Liverpool fans will have the privilege to go to Anfield on Saturday and be part of this Fun Is Back experience. Steve-O, from the point of view of what we've seen on the pitch, was it obvious to you that the players got a significant boost around playing in front of crowds again? Is it something that come across to you, or do you think we'll see it even more so when we play on Saturday? When, let's face it, we're playing a Burnley side who we lost to last season, and that was that was part of a calamitous run of results at Anfield, which you can't imagine would have happened with crowds there.
Yeah, I think the Norwich crowd are actually a fairly vocal bunch to play in front of. So yeah, I think even though they're not cheering for you, I think you just get a buzz out of being in a ground with actual passion rather than empty stadiums where you can hear Kloppo bollocking the shit out of you all game long. You know, so they're probably glad to be able to pretend they can't hear him when he's giving out to them. Because he does enough of that. But no, I'd say they love being back in a ground that had a full capacity. And I'd say, yeah, even though they've had a couple of friendlies at Anfield, stepping back out on Saturday, it's a great game for us to be coming up against Burnley in, to be honest with you. First game of the season back at Anfield. And I think if you can get that game out of the way, it makes a massive difference, because I think the team will just be up for it. And Burnley are horrible to play against at the best of times. So just being able to get that game out of the way will be a big plus. Going in, you know, into the third round of games. Chelsea, third game of the season, isn't it?
Going into that game,
hopefully with 6 points. Because that's Stamford Bridge as well, if memory serves me.
No, it's at Anfield.
Oh, is it? To Anfield on the bounce, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay, sorry. I haven't looked close enough at the fixtures to see whether it's home or away in terms of games. But That's a massive plus. And yeah, listen, I think we look at that game on Saturday, and I know we'll get into probably, well, now is a good time to look at it. Five first team players aren't in that squad or aren't in that team. Your entire midfield and your left back, the best left back in world football, and you're looking at Matip. He's probably not. I'm not knocking Matip, but he's probably not your first choice centre half over the course of this season. He's an excellent option to have as part of those four centre halves, but he's probably not your first choice. Gomez or even Konate, as he settles in, will probably take that place. Yeah. So you're looking at that side thinking, okay, we talk about it, and I know we'll go on to it, so I won't jump into it now, but it's really nice to get that first win with the side that went out. And Andy hasn't mentioned the fact that 90% of the trippers who were there on the day were shitting their pants. including two of the ones I'm looking at right now with that midfield when I came in. Did you see that fucking midfield? Did you? What's fucking Klopp at? You know, was the talk of everybody before the game. But not you, Andy. You were cool as a cucumber. Yeah. But it made sense to start that midfield based on when people have come back and how people have performed in pre-season and stuff like that. And by and large, the team performed quite well, comfortably, I would say. They weren't excellent, but they were comfortable throughout the game.
Yeah. And Pete, I actually did switch on the Barcelona game yesterday. And after watching the Liverpool game and obviously other Premier League games, the Tottenham City game being a good example, the difference between full houses and obviously the likes of Barcelona, who still have to play games in front of sparse crowds. Like we're very lucky, aren't we, in terms of being able to go and see our team now?
Yeah, still a huge problem here. It's going to be a massive problem, I think, to be honest with you, because of the, I've said it before, the various autonomous regions will make different decisions. And Spain, as you know, has a much older population than the UK and other parts of Europe. So they still, especially with the variant kind of creeping about, they still can't take the, you know, the chance. So yeah, you're seeing Barcelona, whatever 11 they can put out yesterday, you know, scraping across the line. So we are very lucky that, you know, listen, there's a lot of it politicized. The government made a decision and they wanted to stick by it, and let's see what happens. So I think by and large as well, in fairness to the UK, they've gotten their act together in terms of, you know, getting the majority of people vaccinated. So you're in that bracket where you're saying, okay, let's get back out there. But yeah, I mean, it's just a huge sigh of relief. It's great. Even watching it on the television, I mean, I don't know anybody that's watching us tonight. I just couldn't drag myself to watch an awful lot of games. Now I can't get enough. You know, I've got the Sky, access to the Sky channels, and I'm just watching all the games, even the insignificant ones to us, like Villa and Watford. I'm watching them just to soak up the atmosphere. It's the fun, as Andy says, the fun is definitely back.
Yeah, and for me, what made it sort of back to normality was the fact that we got oversaturated last season, didn't we? The way that the games were so spread out. What we were back to this weekend in terms of the fun being back was just the normality of having, you know, the early kickoff. Obviously, we had the Friday night game that really got things, you know, that lit the touch paper, didn't it? And then we were into an early kickoff, a decent game. Then we had the 3 o'clock games back. You know, we had, what, five of those games, I think it was. Five or six of those games. Then the tea time game. Then a couple of games on Sunday. Back to And the way I feel in terms of the fun being back, this is why I said at the start, you know, we're having to wait. It feels like the anticipation is already there for the second week, isn't it? You know, it's great that we're playing first in some ways because we don't have to wait an awful long time to see Liverpool again. Mm. And I'm going to be one of those lucky ones who get over to see Liverpool. No, Shawnee Lawson's doing a silly 2 a.m. boat to go over there. Like, people are making the trips over. Can't wait. The fun's going to be back. The, you know, time over in Liverpool over the weekend. For many fans, I've seen some fans in the comments already saying that, you know, they're either going this week or they've got their trips planned in the next few weeks to go over. Steve O's mentioned it. That Chelsea game's going to be an absolute belter. I mean, you know, European champions coming to Anfield, all things point to being teams who've won both the opening games. So I think it's definitely a case of, you know, we can't wait really for this season to really sort of keep going. Mind you, we've got the international break straight after the Chelsea game. So the Premier League always find a way, or football always finds a way of putting something in our way. But look, anything to close from you, Andy, seeing as it was your topic, anything else that's popped into your mind that really signified football is back?
No, you just got me really jealous there. You know, yourself and Mick going to the game and Shawnee as well. Like, you'd be in the sand and no doubt. And there'd be a fella going around with the European Cup, and he might even have the Premier League with him.
Might have the Premier League, yeah.
2 pounds to lift it over your head, and you'd be sinking loads and loads of bottles of beer. And then he'd be going into the game. It's going to be epic. The fun is 100% back. I don't get to go over till October, but I'll have nearly as much fun at home watching it. I gotta say, actually, it's ironic when you're watching another game, because I got sick of watching other teams last year. Unless it was Liverpool, like, I didn't really bother, like, that over saturation of games and commentary and punditry, and you really got sick of it. But in fairness, you know, Brentford and their fans, and look, Sky, you have to credit them when they do get something right. The coverage and everything about that Friday night football was absolutely brilliant, and it really got me excited about our game. You know what I mean? I knew it was going to be a similar setup when we were playing against Norwich in their ground, small ground, loud fans, but even, you know, even to be able to sit down and watch other teams playing again and to get that feeling about the excitement they used to get years ago when the Premier League was back after the summer. So, yeah, that too.
Yeah. A big shout out to Brentford. I actually played a friend, a pre-season friendly 12, 13 years ago against Brentford's reserves years ago. They were a nothing club. To see them playing in the Premier League is just...
Yeah. Yeah, the stadium,
more or less Chiswick. I lived in Chiswick for 8 years, and yeah. You know, I'm gonna go to the Brentford game at Griffin Park. It's a League of Ireland ground. Anybody that's familiar with that part of West London will know what I'm talking about.
It's literally like situated beside like a motorway overpass.
There's a pub behind it where a few of the lads now, it's not rowdy. Brentford itself is an okay area, it's a working class area, but right beside it is Chiswick, where anybody that works in television lives in Chiswick. So you know, you'll have, if Gary Neville probably has a place there, and the deck, I lived in Chiswick. You need to go if you're going to an away
mix
game,
it with the stars.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful. No,
we hate you for other reasons.
If you're gonna go to an away game, go to the Brentford game. Trust me. You know, there won't be any hassle. You'll be on the Chiswick High Road. If there's a great Irish pub down there owned by a fella from Offaly, you'll have a great go to the Brentford game. Trust me.
I'm sure the Liverpool fans who are lucky enough to go to that will have a great day out. Mm. So look, the fun is back, but we're going to get a bit more into Liverpool and the season ahead before I get into why we're going to win that league, especially after seeing City's opening day capitulation against Spurs. We'll let Steve-O talk a bit about the squad depth and basically what we saw and, you know, touching on the whole fact of sort of a little bit of panic setting in. When you're seeing that, you'd no reason to think that Liverpool would do anything but beat Norwich on Saturday, but there were a few jitters when you've seen a midfield of Milner, Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain. Probably not one we'll see again this season, unless it's maybe a Carabao Cup game or something you wouldn't expect. So there was a little bit of that. I'm not gonna lie. With half an hour to kick off, and you see a team like that. But on the opposite end of it, you've seen the likes of Jota getting a start along with Mane and Salah. You had the ability to bring on Firmino. You had the ability to bring on Fabinho. You didn't even see Thiago there. You know, we've got what looks like an able deputy at left back. So, Steve-O, squad depth. I've sort of touched on some of the positions there, but for you, is it enough? Because I've seen other people say that this is almost a skeleton squad that we've got.
Yeah, I think I think it's a case whereby you're looking at I listened to a lot, so I was away for a few days before the match on Saturday, and I was listening. I was consuming an awful lot of podcasts and stuff like that, which I normally wouldn't do, but just because I was away, I was in the car 6-8 hours each day.
Gumball rally was it?
Gumball, well, it wasn't. I actually passed the Gumball rally in Killybegs. They were going the opposite way to us, but yeah, it was the retro Gumball rally was on this weekend. But yeah, so we were spending 6-8 hours a day in the car and listening to an awful lot, like the Guardian and fucking Off the Ball and Second Captain's Knot. Everybody talking about it was talking about how we were really going to struggle. People were reckoning we were in the mix, but they were talking about the depth that United have, that Chelsea have, that City have. And it just got me thinking, do we have enough depth? Or it's not do we have enough depth. We have enough depth. Is the quality of the depth that we have good enough across the squad? And I suppose we proved 2 years ago that you can win a league with 15 players ultimately if you get lucky or if you don't have any major injuries. But how often you can win a league with 15 players is the next question. And if we're real about a few things, everybody wanted Tsimikas to do well the other day. And I'm sure he'll grow into it over the next few games whilst Robertson's out injured. But how stable he did give up possession on a number of occasions. He got caught out on a number of occasions. So we have to watch that. You look at Milner, he looked fucked in that game. You know, he was caught out on a number of occasions. He was left on his arse on a few occasions. He was, you know, the two, and I know he's yet again had really good stats apparently this preseason in terms of his fitness and his capability, but in a match situation he looked off the pace, probably because he's fucking 35 or 36 years of age in central midfield in a team that's required to work really, really hard. And you look at Mane, everybody's saying he, you know, and he did look leaner. I just don't know if this is going to be a season where we get a 10-goal Mane or a 20-goal Mane this season, you know. Yeah. And Jota wasn't overly impressive to me in the game. He got his goal, but he didn't light things up. Bobby came on and looked decent, but I think we probably are an attacker short, and I really hope that we're keeping our powder dry this summer so we can go and sign Mbappe next summer. But I doubt very much that that's the reason we're not spending money this summer. We're not Florentino Perez. So I think it's done from a business decision rather than a cunning plan point of view. And therefore, you know, I'm actually okay with this guy. I genuinely, I know I'm flip-flopping here in terms of my thoughts on it. I don't actually care too much if we don't sign anybody else between now and the end of the window. I think we've enough in us to challenge. Even if we went out and spent 100 million on somebody, there's no guarantee that that makes a difference. We're against a range of teams that have a lot of quality across them. What they don't have is our manager. And what I genuinely don't believe they have is the unity and the togetherness that's in that squad that we have, that the three other teams don't have. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a fucking sham. I don't, no one will tell me any different. He's a plonker, and he's not there next season. You know, that's the reality of it. Tuchel, it's a honeymoon period for him. We don't know what it's going to be like for him if he gets five or six games where they wobble. And every team wobbles over the course of a full season. What happens when they wobble? And if they wobble in October or November, where are they going to be at? I'm not so worried about Pep losing that game to Spurs the other day. We're top teams are going to take points off each other throughout the season. City will be fine. They'll be right up there in May, very, very close to the top. I'm fighting it out. But I look at who we've got around us, and I think it would be nice if we brought in another player in that sort of attacking area. But everybody's talking about the need for a genie replacement. I'm not sure we have that need, personally. I would like to see another attacker come in, but if they don't, I'm not too bothered. So I'll leave it over to the others to give an indication of what they think.
Yeah, I mean, Pete, and the sort of what Steve-O was saying there is being backed up by some of the comments, you know, an Origi upgrade, another midfielder. I think we're all satisfied with what we've got defensively. We've got, you know, the best keeper in the world. We've got a very able deputy in Quevin Kelleher. You know, it really does seem to come down to those two areas, the attacker and the midfielder.
A couple of things I would take. I mean, Stephen, it's great. We've now all worked together before, so it's good to meet him. And he's a breath of fresh air, you know, says it the way he sees it. But I would, you know, the two things that jump at me immediately, Steve, about what you're saying. You can't say in one breath that, you know, you're worried about, I don't know, James Milner and the midfield not having enough lungs, and then saying we don't need a Genie Wijnaldum replacement. Just can't do that. It's one or the other. I believe your second point, which kind of contradicts your first, is right. I think Genie Wijnaldum has created a bigger hole in the squad than we think. I don't think it's an emergency, but we'll probably feel it against the bigger sides. That's one thing. You're absolutely
just on
right.
That, Pete. Yeah. Just on that. What I'm saying is, Milner looked out of his depth, but Milner isn't going to be relied upon for 25 games this season.
No. And I'm just saying you can't say both things. But anyway. Anyway, yeah. I agree with you. One of them needs to be replaced. With regard to up front, yeah, I think everybody in the dog knows that, you know, we need something up front. I think you're a little bit harsh on Jota. I thought you'd done all right. I think Salah, to be honest with you, this is the year where he actually could be really in contention for the Ballon d'Or. It depends on how well we are. I really don't see anybody else in the world that is, and I keep saying about him, he's probably the most underrated player in the world. So we're looking at, every week I wonder what record has he broken. It's incredible. Mane, I think, you know, he just had a bad season, and he has set his own standards. He has set the standards so high. I mean, I think of Bayern Munich, Mane. I think of when he signed for Forest against Arsenal. I haven't seen anybody make that kind of impact for us since John Barnes, since I was a kid. So Mane gets a pass for last season, considering it was such a disaster. And you're right about what a lot of the media were saying. I've seen somebody saying today that Leicester are going to replace us in the top four. I mean, we limped the whole season last year, and we were an okay toward, to be honest. So I think we'd be okay.
So like, if Leicester lose half their squad like we did last year, they'd more depth than us. Let's be honest. There's people out there just saying things.
I agree with you, Andy. To be honest with you, since I first met Andy, it's maybe kind of sit there and look at Liverpool and go, what really is going on? I tell you what, in my opinion, and it goes under the radar, and Andy and I were talking about this before we came on, the amount of contract renewals at this club of absolute world-class, world-beating players that you won't find at any other club within 6 weeks is unprecedented and unheard of. If this was another club, you'd be talking about maybe Van Dijk wants to go to Real Madrid after he gets fit. Who else signed a contract?
Liverpool. This was Liverpool 4 years ago, Pete. Yeah. That's not even another club.
Exactly. Maybe Trent Alexander, you know, wants to replace Dani Alves at Barcelona. Maybe these guys have had it, but they've all signed new contracts. And what annoys me about these bottom reds, as Andy calls them, and Andy quite rightly calls them, because they haven't got a fucking clue what's going on, is that this man and this club and FSG and Michael Edwards and Jurgen Klopp has committed these players to new contracts. Now, if somebody comes in to grant our wish list, going in and being replacing Origi as a supplement to the front four, and maybe a little bit of creative quality in the middle of the park, maybe I think this is just a dream window, and I can't believe we've got it done. But if we do nothing else but what we've just done, and maybe bring in another forward who's not a world beater but can aptly cover the four, I'll say this has just been an unbelievable. What I can't believe is the amount of moaning that's. I'm completely with Andy when it comes to the amount of moaning that goes on. And by the way, I was one of them. Steve, I was like you. I was like, what else are we going to do? But sometimes you just have to sit back and go, look at these lads signing new contracts 2-3 years before their contract extends. I mean, for me, that's the sign of a well-run club. These lads, the top players in the world, by the way, are looking at this club going, I want to be there into me early to mid-30s. That says everything.
I agree. And to be fair, I'm one of the last people to say signings are the answer. As the lads will testify to over the years, that's always been my thoughts, that Jurgen Klopp and what he can do with that squad is far more important than bringing in a new player for the sake of it. I do want to call Paul Smith out on something here, though. He's just said we need midfielders in the mold of Ari Elien Tchouaméni, right? And then said Harvey Elliott is overrated 2 minutes later. Now, if you can tell me you've seen enough of that fucker for Monaco to tell me he's worth buying, but Harvey Elliott's overrated, having performed the way he did for Blackburn last season, you're talking bollocks. Sorry.
Yeah, if Phil Casey was here, he would say shiny new things. And
yep.
Move on.
Magpie.
Yeah.
I mean, just in terms of the squad, obviously, Andy, we have nailed down players that would guarantee essentially us getting, you know, the best years out of some of these players' careers. Yeah. And, you know, we've already got, I think one of the things, it's something I'll touch on a little bit more, but one of the things that possibly goes under the radar a bit is what we're doing is we're extending contracts of players who have already proven to be winners. They've already won, in a lot of cases, a league title and a European Cup. So, like, this is a team that's proven winners. We're not sort of shooting for the stars. We're not trying to, you know, we're trying Harvey Elliott, wrestling green. Well, that's probably a fake that could go on a while, and Paul Smith is in the mud after Steve O just dragged him there.
In the mud, he won't be the first. Paul Smith's in the mud. La 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 la.
What are you calling? You're the legend in my
mind. That's not Steve O's dragged into the mud. And actually, Steve O, if Steve O really wants to, Steve O can send you to Massey's. He's got it.
I've got the hurl to prove it.
He's got a hell to prove it. But I mean, if we look at one of our other title rivals, Andy, we've got Ole at the wheel. Yeah. They brought in some shiny new things. Yeah. They had a big win at the weekend, and they've got their fan base hyped up, you know, with their signing still to essentially come in and make an impact, in Sancho and Varane. Like, when you compare us with them, like, do you get a little bit concerned that we're not adding some additional pieces to a position of strength? Like, would that make you feel a little bit better?
Yeah, look, as much as the next fan likes shiny new things, I like shiny new things. Brand new players are great, but Klopp has a lot of trust in that team that won us the league 2 seasons ago. Last year was a disaster, and we won the Champions League the year before that. These are players that are still in their prime, who he must be thinking after this contract, they're halfway through these contracts, he will start to replace them towards the end of his own contract. But, like, talking about squad depth, Liverpool have the best 11, or probably the best 14 in the whole league. And these issues that people are highlighting about our depth come into play if we lose players in a way we did last year. Obviously, we lost Virgil for the season again, or Gomez for the season again, or Matip out for the rest of the season again, Alisson out for a period of time. And then you have to pull apart your best midfield and put Fabinho playing centre-back. You have to put Henderson playing centre-back, and then you have to play Milner there, Ox there every single week. That's a different conversation altogether. But the game against Norwich was what we would have in 70% of games. Norwich away, it's similar to sort of 70% of games where you can't afford to change up your midfield. You know, none of those players are going to be your strongest midfield this season. So you got Virgil that's bypassing the midfield with search and balls. And then when we were, the times of the game that we weren't in possession, they did a good enough job. That's fine. And Owen Bourke made the point earlier, he thinks we'll see us rotating a lot. Klopp tends to rotate and make a lot of changes at the very beginning of the season, probably up as far as November. And then come Christmas, you kind of, to get us through that sort of loads of games, you start to see the strongest playing a lot. But like, it's very difficult to bring in a better player than Origi, and then he knows he's got to get past Salah, Mane, Firmino, and Jota. Who's gonna fancy that challenge? So you've got someone like Harvey Elliott, right? Who's quality. Right, quality potential. He was going to be prepared to be there on our study. And when he gets minutes, he's the top players. When they get minutes, they prove themselves. And then that's his way of getting up the pecking order. But no established top striker is going to want to come in and see what every time Jota scores, he plays, he scores. You can't shift those other three players out of the team. So when we talk about depth, that's when you lose two or three of those players for the season. But you can't. That's not how a manager would be planning for the season with this risk factor that you're going to lose four across your top four, and then you bring in somebody of a better quality than Origi. It's a hard balancing act. Midfield, yeah, Ginny, I love them. You know what I mean? He's always fit. You would say it's going to leave a massive void in the midfield. I think it will, but you have to remember, we bought an extra midfielder last summer when we didn't really need one. He brought in Thiago then. And I think the writing was kind of on the wall that Ginny might even go at the end of the window last year. As it turns out, we went for free this year. But that was the succession planning for Ginny. There's no way Thiago's coming into that Liverpool squad and not expecting to play every single week. So you're probably not going to see a starter coming in. And in terms of backups, it's very difficult to improve on the backups, especially if you're talking about Naby Keita, who spent 60 million on, who's currently a backup. You've got Curtis Jones, another up and coming superstar. I rate him. You know, he's the next product like that we had Trent. And then across the back, he's brought in Konate. We were crying out for somebody to come in. He came in early in the window and people forgot all of a sudden that we did that business. Look, there probably is a need for one or two players if we're to experience the same sort of crisis as we did last year. As I said at the start, I love shiny things too, but it's a balancing act. And Klopp knows best. If he thinks we need quality, he'd be bashing the door down on John Henry's yacht and the money we spent. But looking at the squad there now, yeah, maybe we're shy an extra, you know, just one extra. You know, but when people are talking Liverpool's chances down the top four or challenging for the league, they're basing it on last season when it was horrific. And look, Klopp has a lot to learn from last year as well. It was a bad year for him personally in his personal life, and trying to manage that team that had just won the league, that he couldn't get to celebrate it, that he couldn't, you know, because when you work so hard, you have to have that release. You know what I mean? They never would have got that. They're practically straight back into it again. No preparation, no preseason, and then injuries all over the shop. So, look, maybe the next couple of years is the time to start seeing the top players being replaced. But right now, there's more than enough there to make a title challenge. I think, as I said, 14 of those players are better than the best 14, Chelsea, City, United, whoever else can pick their quality. Bring it on,
I think is what you're saying, Andy.
And look, this guy's there in the comments throwing names there as well, like Minamino. I mean, he's a lot to prove there as well if he doesn't go out the door. You know, he looked bright in pre-season. He's not going to fit to think he's finished. You know, and they can't expect to have a much higher level of quality in your ranks that a lot of these players mightn't even get picked in the squad. You know, it's a tough balancing act, and it's the kind of beauty of having such quality 11.
I don't agree with you there, Andy. Everything you've said for the last 6 years or so.
European Cups and Premier Leagues.
Yeah. He's talking about it's a good job Klopp doesn't watch this. just in terms of saying we can't really get much better than Jota or Minamino. That's a fallacy. You know,
who's going to come in, Steve? Let me tell you the way it works, and you'll know this.
A top player
is not going to risk. I mean, if you're a top centre forward and you're looking at Firmino, you're looking at Salah and Mane, and you're thinking, I'm a top player, I'm 23, 24.
Yeah.
Am I going to take the risk?
Is that why Jack Grealish didn't go to City?
No, listen, there's a myriad of reasons. Why Jack Grealish
is going to start every
hang
game,
on,
Stephen.
Hang on, you asked a question, let me answer.
No, he's not. I didn't ask a question. You just came in with your opinion. I didn't ask you a question. I was going back to Andy.
But you just asked the question.
Jack, go on, Grealish, finish out Jack what you
Grealish
want to say.
As Jack Grealish said, you asked the question, I'm going to answer it. Because Silva is gone, and he probably fancies himself to go in there and replace Silva. Manchester City haven't replaced that player, that in the hole player that can make, they don't have a centre forward. So they need somebody that can put a ball on a plate for absolutely anyone. And Jack Grealish is perfect at doing that. Now, will he do it? I don't know. But that is exactly why Jack Grealish has gone there. Anyway, next point
top
is
players.
A top centre forward is not going to sign and risk his career and not being able to shift.
Of course he will. The club didn't approach. It's not like the club approached players this summer and they were turned down by top players who didn't want to come and play.
I didn't say that.
But you're saying they wouldn't. They would. We just haven't made the approaches. Simply because we don't have the money to. We don't have the money to because for the last 18 months, the club hasn't had the commercial income that they normally
would.
Let me finish. We didn't have the commercial income to go and sign the players that we wanted to. You're telling me Klopp didn't want to improve the squad more than he did last summer? Of course he did. Did he want to improve it more this summer? Yeah, of course he did. He's come out and said that in not so many words. But he said, I have to work within the remit of this club. This club only spends what it brings in, and COVID has completely fucked us. That's what
he
said.
Where's the Brad Jones money, John?
but the reality is, top players would come and sign for us and fancy themselves to have a go at that.
I just don't think now is the time with the front three.
Of course it is. Mane's had a terrible season. If you were a top player,
one terrible season. Do you think Mane should be replaced?
No, I'm saying that a top player. I'm saying that a top player would fancy themselves to come in and possibly take Mane's place in that side. That's what a top player would fancy.
I would think it would take an Mbappe that level to come in.
That's a different Stevo. It was me you told I was talking shite, so can I answer that?
Yeah, that's
a different conversation. If we're in the business of replacing Mane or Salah, which we're absolutely not, the two players are in their prime. Klopp is planning on playing them for every single game that they're available, fit and fresh for. That's a different conversation. Eventually, Salah will have to be replaced. Eventually, Mane will have to be replaced. Eventually, Bobby. But it's not going to happen now. Maybe it might have happened if Klopp got the business he wanted to get done last summer. We didn't have empty stadiums for the last 18 months or whatever it is now. Then a lot of that, he might have been thinking of now is the time to start his succession planning and developing his new squad. But we're a year behind because the club reported a loss. It certainly isn't the time to be selling your top players. And I think we'd be in the market for you. Look, even Grealish, it's a stupid signing. 100 million, 400 grand a week, and he doesn't really improve that City team. I think Bernardo Silva is a better player. I would way rather Bernardo at Liverpool than Jack Grealish, 100%. The way you want teams to play in the Premier League, it's just, and he's going to play. You don't spend 100 odd million on a player and pay him 400 grand a week if you're not going to play him in 85% of the games. He's one of the first three or four names on the team sheet.
Listen, I think there's more at play to that transfer for Grealish than there is him being. It's the fact that he's English. It's the fact that he's an icon for English fans. Man City, Steve-o, I've seen as a relevant club.
Grealish, Sterling. That's what Pep wants.
And Foden, John Stones, as well. Obviously. And John Stones.
And Foden, absolutely. Well, yeah. But listen, Harry Kane makes perfect sense for them. And probably by Thursday, they will have a centre forward because they'll
They've lost Aguero, right? They want to, with unlimited funds, it's a bit of a no-brainer to bring in Harry Kane, one of the top scorers for the last 4 years. You won't get Salah from us. It makes sense. But that's not what we're at the moment.
What I'm saying is we have to set our standards higher than Minamino and Divock Origi as challengers to Salah and Mane, and to think that players won't come here. Jota is a prime example.
Well, Steven,
he had all the stats.
Yeah, okay, can I just say, look, you're talking about high standards. They've brought in Konate, right? They've spent 40 million or something like that. It's just because we spent like 70, 80 million on Van Dijk, it makes that look like a cheap version of a centre-back signing. But they brought in Konate when we've got Gomez and Matip, who've been absolutely immense for us. And Klopp has identified that maybe these players won't be quite available based on their injury record, so it's worth spending the money on. But if you're going to, if you see Salah, who's normally available, Mane is normally available, Firmino doesn't get injured too often, and then, look, you've got Jota to come in as well. Doesn't make very much sense to go out and spend 50, 60 million on a player that's going to be...
Yeah, listen, I'm not saying you have to spend it. I'm not saying you have to spend it. Top players aren't always expensive players. You know, you don't have to spend huge money to get a top player, and you don't necessarily get a top player if you spend huge money. We've seen that over the years. Lots of other clubs have seen that when they've gone out and spunked. You look at fucking Nicolas Pepe, 73 million for Arsenal. He's looked dirt since he was signed. So I'm not one of these people saying we have to spend money. Far from it. I'm just not buying into the idea that we can't expect a higher level of backup than Origi and Minamino, because both of those players, Minamino at Southampton, didn't light the world up. Origi has been brutal since he scored the goal against fucking Spurs in the final of the Champions League. We have to move on from these players. Accepting that they're as good as we can get to back up our squad isn't acceptable. Not that it's not acceptable, but it's okay for us to set our standards higher than that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's difficult, but it's difficult, Steve. You know, it's difficult to find players that will come in. This is what I'm saying. There's two things at play, really. Liverpool sniffing the direction of a footballer, and 10 million quid goes onto his price.
Of course. I understand.
You have to be able to give the younger players minutes as well. Trent didn't get into this team without being given minutes. Curtis Jones won't establish himself in our midfield without being given minutes. You have to have 100%. And that's why I'm not bothered about Harvey Elliott.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But he played Harvey Elliott centrally for a lot of this preseason. I don't think he necessarily sees him as a player to take over from Mane or Salah, because he doesn't have the pace that they have. He's a more technically gifted player. From the honestly limited amounts I've seen him, I've watched highlights of Blackburn last year when it would come up on the feed of him having done well, and you'd see 3 or 4 minutes of what he did, and he looked impressive. But maybe he's seen as a more attack-minded number 10 type player. I agree on Curtis Jones.
I think he plays wide in the games where he maybe leaves Salah out or Mane out.
Maybe so. And that remains to be seen. I totally agree on Curtis Jones. He looked really good in a struggling Liverpool side last season. I can't wait to see what he looks like when the shackles are off.
He's going to be excellent this year. And I totally agree. With their fans behind him, it's going
to
be excellent.
And I totally agree with giving them the minutes, and that younger players have to get the minutes. All my argument is, and I'll stand over it till the day I die, you don't have to settle. And
the reality is... I think that the only difference I had was, like, Yeah, but what big time? But you made a point there a couple of minutes ago to say they don't have to be expensive players.
Exactly. Pedro Neto off Wolves.
Yeah.
Pedro Neto off Wolves.
I think there's a list of 4, 5, 6 players who we've been linked with over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. And that, you know, even more recently, Bowen of West Ham. I mean, you know, I think there's a certain type of player that Liverpool will look to bring in to be the next Mo Salah, to be the next Mane, to be the next Jota. And what I mean by that is the next player that we can buy in the sort of 40 to 50 million bracket that will go on to be someone who's worth more like a 70 million Pepe type of player that never actually became any sort of a player in Arsenal's case. And I think, you know, to expect us to go out and buy, this is why I'm, you know, and many Liverpool fans will be convinced that Mbappe just isn't going to come to Liverpool at any point. You know, that's not, you know, we're not going to go out there and sign, you know, a Lukaku, a Harry Kane, an Mbappe. That's just not where we're going to go shopping. And I do think a player can be brought in who is better than Divock Origi and can potentially compete with the four lads that we've got there at the moment. So, look, we'll move on. It's always good to have a healthy debate. A few popcorn emojis went into the chat there as that was unfolding, which was good to see. But I'm going to bring it back to Liverpool winning the league this season. We obviously got a little bit of a sample of what our rivals are likely to do this season on the pitch. We've seen, you know, United winning very comfortably. We've seen Chelsea winning very comfortably. We've seen Leicester eke out a result. I mentioned Leicester more in the top four conversation than anything else, although we need to be thinking higher than the top four this season. We've seen City slip up. Now, I thought the pressure was on us in some respects. You know, it felt like, you know, teams had already gone out there and done something, and we needed to go out, and then we absolutely did cruise to a victory against the team that we absolutely should have won. But I just think the whole context of this season for me, and the reason why I say we're winning the league, and this is not about getting carried away off the back of a fairly routine performance and win against regurgitating that famous show. I do think that, you know, with what happened last season, and we've got a classic game coming up this weekend in Burnley, and we've got plenty of those scores to settle this season with teams that will come to Anfield. We've got scores all over the shop to settle. You know, we lost so many home games. You know, we've got what happened against Everton in both of those games to put right this season. You know, despite the fact that it's going to be Rafa who we're going to come up against. You know, we've got European champions coming to Anfield in just over a week's time. You know, we've got United who we failed to beat at Anfield this season. You know, we've got a title defence that we never really properly got to defend last season. You know, it was such a, when you look back to this weekend's games, you know, it just puts into context how fake that season really was. You know, we really, that was not a proper season's football. And I think these players will come back more hungry than ever. I think they'll be the most hungry squad in the league. I think it's the most rejuvenated manager out there in the league this season. I mentioned it earlier before, we've got proven winners. You know, how many teams will go out there? We know Man City will go out there with predominantly 11 players every week who've won a league title. They haven't won a European Cup. You know, which teams are going to go out there and be proven winners? I remember every season when we said this year was going to be our year, but we always had that sort of, you know, that in the back of our mind, but no one really had done this before. No one had won this league before. Well, look, everyone's won this league before, pretty much, who's going out there. And I'm absolutely convinced that we will bounce back. I think City have got such a tough job this season to retain this league. It's been proven over the number of years the Premier League's been in existence how hard it is to retain it. And I just, for me, you know, you can overreact and you can do all your hot takes, but I just feel that for City, as well as trying to retain the league, the deflation that came with losing that Champions League and what they'll be putting in to try and correct the wrongs of what they feel of not being able to win that European Cup, and the energy they'll put in to try and rectify that, I think that'll be a huge distraction to them. And I just think we've got the overall sort of perfect combination to go and win the league this season. I don't really need to come to Andy first, that he can really finish this topic off at the end. So I'll come to you, Pete. Where do you see us where do you rank us in terms of title contenders?
Well, I think Liverpool are always at their most dangerous when they're being written off. I don't know why that is, to be honest with you. I often find, especially with the emergence of social media, that it's very often a combination of clickbaiting and wishful thinking. You know, there's very few people out there that are actually critical, you know, when it comes to any of the top teams. If you're in any way critical about Liverpool, you'd say that stability is very, very important in the game. And it doesn't matter how much money you spend, you have to, shall we say, embed even top players into your system and into your side. Liverpool, at the moment, don't have that problem. They've just locked everybody down. And you use words like rejuvenate. And I think that goes over an awful lot of people's heads. A lot of people are like, whatever. No, the value of another year's experience and this group being together, just clicking. And with last year being so bad, based on nothing else but the pure misfortune, probably fatigue. I think the COVID break probably caused an awful lot of freakish muscle fatigue, particularly in our players in the way we play. I think with everybody back together, back sharp, back fit, you tend to forget who we're dealing with here. We're talking about Virgil van Dijk. You could make an argument for being the best centre-back that has kicked the ball in English football, certainly for the last 30, 40 years, without exaggerating. You know, you talk about a front three that doesn't really need, you know, any tweet, it needs to be supported, as Steve says, better, but it certainly doesn't need any changes. And you just look at, we've got the best goalkeeper in the world, you've got the best emerging right back, established probably right back in the world. To be honest with you, I look at Manchester City, and don't get me wrong, lots of lovely touches, but still a back four that has been spent, well, a back six now, that, you know, he spent the guts of £500 million and still can't get right. You know, Spurs, if you watch the game, you just had that feeling that if Spurs got at them, could make it stick in the final third, and they got a couple of chances that they were going to score, and they did. That's exactly what they did. Like, so for me, Manchester City's vulnerabilities, it's incredible that a man can spend closing in on £1 billion on a squad and have no centre forward, but a backup for the centre forward for £30 million. So Liverpool, for me, it's there for the taking. The only real threat is Chelsea. I mean, I look at what Manchester United have brought in. There's a reason why Real Madrid didn't want to give Rafael Varane an extra £10 million a year, because he's not worth it. He's past his best. Maybe the hunger's gone. You know, Sancho, if a manager like Gareth Southgate doesn't trust you in the final third when he really needs it, and he wasn't trusted, he was brought on to take a penalty in the biggest game of Southgate's career. He wasn't trusted to play the game. So these are players. Paul Pogba doesn't want to be there. Bruno Fernandes, don't get me wrong, he'll get on the end of things. But again, you're always looking for somebody in that midfield to kind of make the others play. You're not going to win a league with Fred and McTominay. You know, I still think Wan-Bissaka is a liability, and Harry Maguire is Harry Maguire, and they don't have a goalkeeper. So I'm looking at, again, Liverpool, and I'm looking at Chelsea. A lot of people writing off Thomas Tuchel. I think Thomas Tuchel's a good coach. I think he's good for the German players that have been brought in. That Jungfle that they have, the false nine, Havertz is a good player. But again, Chelsea have their weaknesses too that we don't have. So for me, to be honest with you, keep writing us off. because I really think other teams are spending to catch up with us. That's the whole thing. Every time another team brings in a player, oh, he's as good as Van Dijk, oh, he's as good as Salah, oh, he's as good as this. It's them, even it's in their heads, we need to catch up with Liverpool. I think Liverpool are, to be honest, again, it's going to be a bit like, it could be a bit like when we went 10, 20 points ahead. That mightn't happen. But I honestly think we're that far ahead of other teams. I just think as fans after last year, we might have forgotten it a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, I think, you know, something that Pete's mentioning there about being written off, you know, third up, I do sense that, you know, a lot of the so-called experts see us as being the third or fourth best team in this league. I think that hugely underestimates us. What's your view?
It's a hard one to call. I disagree with Pete on the Sancho thing. I think a player that's for 2.5 seasons. No. I'm just saying for a player who for the last 2.5 years has had a goal involvement per game, I in no way would take Gareth Southgate's opinion on a footballer as anything to do with their capabilities. He's a defensive shitbag.
He made the final.
You know what? He's Gerard Houllier won 5 trophies. It meant his football was septic.
I mean, one of the top national federations trusted Gerard Houllier to run the whole shop. You can't say that about Gerard Houllier. Gerard Houllier took
an ordinary. What did I say? He's a very defensive coach. So let me just make my point here.
Excellent coach. He wasn't.
Gareth Southgate is a very defensive-minded coach who shit the bed every time he was up against something. That's why Jadon Sancho didn't play, not because of his capabilities, in my opinion. So for me, I think Jadon Sancho has the capability to come in and be a really effective force in the Premier League. The problem for Man United, I think, is their inability to pick who their number one goalkeeper is. The fact that they don't have a world-class goalkeeper.
They don't have one, Steve. They don't have one.
Exactly. They don't have a world-class keeper, regardless of which one they pick. Harry Maguire is a lumbering shitbag. And 80 million for him and England captain and all the rest, or England vice captain, whatever the fuck he was when Kane wasn't around. Man United captain, should I say. Varane isn't I still think Varane's actually a very good player. I think he could have been an excellent player alongside someone like Van Dijk. I'm not saying Van Dijk, but I think putting him in alongside Maguire isn't the answer there.
Do you not think, Steve, that's a problem when you're trying to say, I think this fella's an excellent player and he could be great beside somebody great? I find that's a problem.
I think Harry Maguire is the problem. Everybody was talking about we need to find a partner for Harry Maguire. And my opinion is Harry Maguire is not the answer. You don't need to find a partner for Harry Maguire. You need to find someone alongside him that makes him better. And I don't know if Varane's going
to
do that.
You can't call someone a good player based on the fact that you need someone to unlock his ability.
I agree. And that's why I think Maguire is a poor player. I don't think he's an 80 million pound defender. I think he's slow. I think he's reactive. I think he gets totally burned far too often, and they're not going to win a league with him. They have tremendous firepower. Paul Pogba was phenomenal on Saturday. People saying he's not consistent enough. I think he suffers with injuries too much, because when he was in the team last season, he actually had quite a lot of involvement in their good play. And I think he will again this season. It's whether he can play 90% of their games rather than 70% of their games. McTominay and Fred, totally agree on them. Both very average players. But average players in that part of the park, if they're just doing a consistent job, they can do the job for you. United had average players in those positions at the best of times throughout all of their title winning teams. But they had the firepower in front of them and a solid defense.
They pot scores get your goal out of nowhere every week. Yeah. You know?
But then they'd have a Park Chung, or they'd have a Darren Fletcher or a Michael Carrick or whoever it might have been alongside them. An average plotter, you know. So I'm not too worried about United. City are the reigning champions. It's very difficult to retain what they have. And they have got it's very difficult to retain the title, but they have a lot of quality in there. And they have the ability to get 90 points this season. And then you have Chelsea, who look strong. But as I said earlier on, the situation there is that they could have a wobble. And when they do, who knows what's going to happen. So to answer your question, I think we have an excellent chance. But it depends on whether Mane, Firmino, Jota can actually back up Salah in the burden of scoring goals. It depends whether Thiago, now with Fabinho and Henderson hopefully behind him for the majority of the season, can unlock defences with his passes. We know what he's capable of when he takes the shackles off. But this team was a very disjointed team last season, one that really didn't know its head from its tail, and understandably so, because of the way they were getting fucking 20 centre-back partnerships throughout the season. You know, so with a bit of stability this season, I think we have a great chance. But it's going to be the first proper title race with a few teams involved, I think, in a long time.
Yeah, so, I mean, just on that, I mean...
So I think we'll finish fourth.
Well, at least we finished top four, Steve.
Yeah. Although Leicester could pick us, you know. No, I think we're first or second. Genuinely, I think that's where I think we finish first or second, and within 3 or 4 points of either winning it by 3 or 4 or second by 3 or 4. Is
10 points.
So, Andy, a close title race is kind of where Steve-O ended up there. I mean, the one thing that we've seen some pretty epic title races in recent times. Obviously, the one with City not too long ago. The title race where we threw it away against City a number of years ago. One thing we haven't seen is something that we seen in Spain actually last year, where there was sort of three teams in contention almost to the last day of the season. Are we getting to the stage now where you could potentially see that between three teams of Liverpool, City, Chelsea, United, like it being that close, and we could actually have something that we've not seen for a long time with more than two genuine title contenders come the last sort of two or three games of the season?
No. I'll tell you why in a second. I just want to read for Andy, because it's the only clean comment he's ever put up, and he's always commented. But he's saying Trent is probably the best, or one of the best attacking right-backs, but certainly not the best right-back in the world. Look, could do that conversation to death. Trent is the best right back in the world for us. If you're Liverpool and you play like us, Trent is the most ideal player on the planet to play there.
Absolutely.
If Trent is playing in a different team that may be set up a little bit differently and expect to defend a lot more, and you don't have a midfield who drops back and centre backs who are so good on the ball, who push up the pitch and are comfortable and pacey, then yeah, maybe like England, Trent isn't quite the most suited right back, but you'd play him on the right side of midfield or in attack or whatever. Anyway, on to your question. No, I don't think, look, for a team like Liverpool, who I think suffered most from the lack of crowds, I think that team, that manager, buzz off the crowd more than anyone. No fans was the perfect storm for City, who started slow. They started to get a hold of the league when Liverpool slipped up, and they were able to just go to grounds, have it their way, dead by 4,000 passes. They totally changed the way they played, and teams weren't able to pull it up against them. First game of the season, they go to Wembley, and the Spurs fans are back Wembley. In, and they're whatever the Spurs,
Stadium.
Yeah, it's the same, isn't it? The Spurs Stadium,
Spangly Spurs shiny stadium, yeah.
Big, massive, roundy stadium with shit atmosphere. The Spurs fans are not even the best fans. They just like chant, "Come on, you Spurs!" for the whole thing, and they play okay for 15 minutes, and then they fall apart. City won't like going to crowds, like the Brentford crowd. They won't get it their own way. The opposition is going to react to that crowd, the atmosphere, throw in the extra tackle, and force mistakes from City. So I don't think City are going to have it their own way at all this season. And when we challenge City and we put it up to them, we're better than them. You're talking about United. United had the most amazing season they could imagine last year and finished 5 points ahead of our horrific season with no defenders. Chelsea, they're far from the complete article to win a league. I think the league will be won this year with 90-odd points, and that's going to be us. And second is going to be in the low 80s. And I think that'll be sick. And you'll see a good battle for second, third and fourth again. But I think Liverpool are the team that can get 90 points again. Look, Ray, you hit the nail on the head at the very beginning of this conversation. That title defence last year, they never got to defend the title properly. They felt sorry for themselves. I said at the start about the fun being back. There was no fun last year. It was just routine. Even though we were top of Christmas, it was this every week, this routine. It looked painful. Yeah. And it was a struggle. But if we can keep players fit and they can get back into the mindset that they are the best team in the land and they can stay fit, then I think Liverpool are the team that everyone needs to worry about more than anything. Nobody's going to want to come to Anfield. Can you imagine we would have lost 9, whatever it was? How many games in a row did we lose at Anfield last year?
Six in a row. 18 points that should absolutely be straight back on the board this season.
There's 18 points that probably would have won us the league last year. Like that's how much the crowd matters to Liverpool. And I think City, if they get Kane, that's a big improvement to what they have there now. Yeah. But the likes of Grealish, it doesn't, if I was a City fan,
doesn't improve them 100 million.
No, certainly exactly doesn't. No. And if he doesn't perform to the levels he was performing at Villa, and it's a total, if someone said it earlier on Twitter, it's a typical Nigel Clough scenario, big fish in a small pond, fish in a big pond. Like, if he doesn't get going, I know if they get Kane, they just score goals, he will, because, and he doesn't have to do anything other than bang.
He's good enough, to score goals,
But there's a big focal point now on Grealish to perform in that City team.
It's a big test of his character as well. Andy, we've seen little indiscretions from him, you know, a little bit maybe immaturity or whatever. But he's going to have to be...
He's 25, Ray, or 26.
Yeah, we probably haven't seen those in the last couple of seasons though, Ray, have we? Yeah. Since he kept Villa, you know, he kept Villa up that season and then they were very good last season. I think he copped on when he came back up into the Premier League and he has shown himself to be a leader and a more mature player. And I think he'll be fine at City. I think he'll do well for them. I just don't think he was exactly what they needed. I think Kane is exactly what they needed.
I think you're right, Steve. If you're City, you try to buy John McGinn as well. I mean, I cannot believe that fella goes so far under the radar. And you're missing a trick. I mean, with Fernandinho being 36, I'm saying, let's throw 50 million at John McGinn. You know what I mean? And try to, John McGinn's a smashing player. The relationship is there with Grealish. I think all of these poster boys, sometimes you miss who's really doing the work. Grealish played in the season where Villa almost went down. McGinn didn't. Villa pulled up trees last year when McGinn was playing. I think people are missing a trick with him.
Well, City have needed a striker for a number of years now. I mean, they clearly haven't got the faith in Jesus. Aguero was on the wane for a number of seasons. It's actually amazing that assuming they do get Kane, it's amazing in some ways that they've waited this long to actually go out and buy someone of that, you know, of real star quality like that, in all honesty, when I'm sure they could have gone out and bought someone before now.
Do you see the comments catch me
so what
there.
Andy is saying, he completely ignored what you said, Ray, and he just wants to say something else.
He's surprised it took this long to buy Kane. Yeah, to answer your question, it is a surprise it took longer. But Kane...
Cool. Now what I want to talk about...
Don't
worry, Steve.
Level one listening, that is. It's when you're
kick him out, just
waiting to talk.
It's called non-active listening.
Yeah exactly. now, Chris back there, it makes the comment about Grealish. It seems to be just like everyone forgets about that. During lockdown, Grealish broke the rules and went out and crashed his car. And there was all sorts of rumours about what he was up to. Like, that's the sort of cabbage you're dealing with. And they go out and spend 100 million on him. I mean, for 100 million, want to be getting a bigger brand than that.
I'm
non-active listening.
Yeah, but I want to ignore what you're saying and just say what I want to say. You see how goes?
Just to address that comment on the screen, Mohammed there says, these lads are giving me hope. I don't know whether he means us or he means the Liverpool team. You don't need us to give you hope. That team and Klopp should give you all the hope you need from anyway. You were talk about turning doubters into believers. If you don't believe at this stage, you'll never, ever, ever believe. You don't need new shiny things or or a Gini replacement or an Origi upgrade to give you hope. That, look at that team. Look at us. Look at that. Look at us 5-6 years ago, and look at us now. What hope do you need? I'm going to sit here and do a pod of my own one night and just talk about this team and be the biggest top red I possibly can, and I'll talk about it.
I'd say you'll get loads of viewers that night.
Yeah, but I bore people to absolute.
There must be an FSG anniversary pod coming at some point. I would imagine.
Look,
Andy,
yeah,
in front.
Just
I'm available any night of the week.
Three or four people have said it there about Milner ran the most of any player in the Premier League this weekend. I'm not saying the very first thing I said was that he still finished top of the fucking indexes for the players in pre-season and whatever else, but he got dropped on his arse and he looked lost in parts of the match, and he can run all day and try really hard, but my point was that he's not going to be in our first choice midfield, and that's okay. He'll come in and play 10-12 games in a season, he'll do a good job, and it's great to have him around there because he's a massive help to the likes of Curtis Jones coming through, to the likes of fucking Harvey Elliott coming through, showing them what professionalism can do for your career, as is our captain. And we're talking about underrated players. Jordan Henderson coming back into this team is a massive, massive plus. We're talking about Thiago, we're talking about Fabinho, but to be honest with you, Jordan Henderson coming back into that midfield adds so much to it, and so much in terms of its ability to break quickly, the ability to play a 50, 60-yard pass and open up a team. You know, Trent might have that in his locker, Virgil might have that in their locker, but I think Jordan Henderson does it far more often than either of those players do. And that's something we need to appreciate and be happy about, that he should be back for the Chelsea game. Thiago should be in that team for the Chelsea game. Fabinho, that's a very different midfield going into that Chelsea game with whatever front three you play. Doesn't matter. And I found out the other day, I don't know if this is true because I haven't fact-checked it, but apparently we're only going to lose Mane and Salah for two Premier League games.
January.
That's all we're going to lose them for in the AFCON.
Okay.
Yeah, the way things fall and the way we have that week off and the way the FA Cup comes in. The 8th, 9th of January is the FA Cup, and then it's split. So I think even if they make it to the final, we only lose them for two games because the club will fly them back privately as well. So, you know, barring any sort of mad quarantine requirements, then we should only lose them for two games, which, you know, it's not ideal, but you could easily lose somebody with a fucking dead leg for two games. You know,
exactly. And you know it's coming, and you can plan for it, and Divock can have
exactly. And that's why we've why we've made these purchases this summer to be able to plan.
Oh. Right. So we'll move. So yeah. Consensus is that.
Can I answer Mikey's question?
Yeah, go on.
Will Andy still support Liverpool when FSG sell, or just the Red Sox then? First of all, FSG aren't planning on selling Liverpool anytime soon. So, because I speak to Linda on Twitter regularly now. Well, I speak to her. She doesn't
at
speak
her. You speak at her, Andy.
But she hasn't said anything about the desire.
And she hasn't blocked you yet.
No. And I'm old enough now to say to you, Mikey, I was supporting Liverpool when your arse was the side of a short button. Son.
Something to that effect.
Yeah. So, I'll be still supporting Liverpool, Mikey. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Get that comment off the screen.
We've had the good, we've had the bad. Now unfortunately we're going to have to do the ugly, and we're going to come on to Pete's topic. The club had to come out after the Norwich game and issue a statement around some homophobic chants that were heard the Liverpool fans at the game at the weekend. And I guess, look, we've covered a few difficult subjects on the forum over the last few months. And look, this absolutely falls into that category. Pete, they were aimed at Billy Gilmore. It was an association with being from Chelsea. It's a chant that many Liverpool fans down the years would have sung without either understanding or caring about the context and the connotations that go with it. Just really explain where you're at now with this in terms.
I think it's important. It's important to frame this properly. First of all, it's so disappointing, and you know we've got supporters and followers from all walks of life. It's so disappointing that we're so uncomfortable with this subject and with these type of subject, and we're going to talk about homophobia, of course, but we're so uncomfortable that it's almost like, oh, and now we have to deal with this. It's really disappointing, and it's a disservice to people, to be quite honest with you. Second of all, Liverpool, who position themselves, and we do position ourselves as Liverpool supporters, as somewhat of a little bit of a beacon of light and a moral compass, you know, on how A, teams should be supported, and B, how people should be treated in general. It's really disappointing. Listen, ignorance can be educated against, but, you know, to bury your head in the sand is the biggest sin. And before people start going on, see that what about me that goes on about what about this, about what about that. But I want people to do two things that you've got that I want to dispel first. First of all, it's homophobic. It's a homophobic chant. No matter what you say, it's defiant. Kick it out. I wish people on social media, on the media in general, would just refer to the experts and the people who actually work with this. They're paid to work with this for a living. First of all, the kick it out statement said it very clearly. We're absolutely clear. The rent boy chant is homophobic and must be treated as such. Our statement calling for more action from the FA and from police following a number of reports about homophobic chanting by Liverpool supporters towards Chelsea fans on Sunday. Now, which was followed quite quickly by George Starkey from My Friends Are Cop Outs, who had retweeted what George had said about lots of replies asking why Rent Boys is homophobic. So here's context for anyone genuinely unsure. The chant originates from the 1980s when a Chelsea headhunter was allegedly found to be having male sex worker, and it is intended as an insult to suggest all Chelsea fans again. Now, the problem I have is, again, there's a lot of people. Listen, I don't care what your opinion is, but what I have a huge problem with is the amount of people that will go on and try to tell gay people or any minority, but in this instance, gay people, what they can or they can't be offended by. I would prefer if people threw their hands up in the air and said, I didn't know, or like myself, I do know, to be honest, because I've had plenty of experience with working with gay colleagues in the past. I do know, and yet I laughed along anyway in the past, to my absolute shame. I prefer people to put their hands up like I'm doing now and say, listen, it needs to be educated, and you cannot say, I didn't mean it, I didn't, you cannot use the what about Rico, what about their chant about us being unemployed and whatnot. What about me is just ugliness. Sometimes you've got to stand up and go, it's wrong. Because I tell you what, the huge problem that what about me causes, whenever we do stand up then and say we don't want people to call us bin dippers or chant about unemployment, it just causes that vicious circle. Why not just stand there and say, I'm ignorant, or I, to be honest with you, I just got caught up in banter that I shouldn't use. But please, for God's sake, stop telling gay people what they can and cannot be offended by, or what you did or did not mean by something. I don't care if you have 10 explanations for where you think the rent boy chant comes from. It is offensive to the gay community, and it must stop. Another tweet, you know, there's so many tweets over the weekend. That's why I'm disappointed that we're not using the fancy technology from Gav. But an example, this guy, Dead Baller, what about the other chants, like Feed the Scousers? I genuinely think people are chanting out of banter and for the atmosphere rather than actual hatred for gay people. And this is an account with 50,000 followers. And this is the problem. And that tweet got thousands of likes. And then another young guy, we should create a welcome environment for the LGBTQ plus fans and opposition fans and validate their thoughts. That's the key, the validation of other people's thoughts and how they feel about things, not your A, what about me, or B, your opinion as a straight person, because that's a position of privilege. And I'm sorry, that position of privilege does not afford you to write, again, the right to dictate to a gay person how they should feel about any chant, regardless of what your meaning is. If they do not like the rent boy chant, then don't use it. Yes, it's football and rival, but mutual respect is important, and it's correct. And then a young girl comes in to say, today, those things come in the form of violence, as in, you know, marginalization, violence, sexism, racism, homophobia, and more. And by cutting it out, we are absolutely a better society for it. We've listened before and argued as allies when targeted by racism, sexism in the past, and it must come forward. The rent boy chat must go. I would urge people, stop justifying it. Just stand up and say, I was ignorant, or I knew what it meant, and I laughed along anyway. No one's going to shoot you for it. Engage with, I mean, there's a fantastic Liverpool forum out there called Cop Outs, and they're fantastic. So anybody wants to know what actual gay people think about these things, ask. Instead of going on Twitter or wherever and saying, I don't think it's homophobic, I don't think it's this. Stop thinking on behalf of other people and start asking questions. And for me, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of healthy debate in the chat here, and you know, there's various comments on this, but there seems to be a consistency around, you know, that there's no excuse these days. Certainly, ignorance is not an excuse.
I mean, hang on a second. Why would anybody highlight that comment? It's not even a homophobic chant. Rent boys exist. Calling someone is just calling someone that. The ignorance, well, I'm insulted that would even be highlighted. I'm not here to debate this. As I said at the top of what I had to say, take that comment off. It's ignorant. It putting the comment up suggested that it's here for debate. It's a homophobic chant. And an organization like Kick It Out has come on record and said, listen, there's no debate here. It's a homophobic chant. Danny, whatever your name is, I'm sorry. I'm not here to debate with you over whether it is a homophobic chant. I'm not going to explain to you why it the rent boy chant is meant to, as a disparaging comment towards somebody that engaged in a sexual act with another man. Therefore, it's homophobic. Well, I'm not here to educate, but please don't.
Well, we are here to educate, Pete. The whole purpose, not to give ignorance a platform. Okay, listen.
Please remove that comment.
I will in a minute. Listen for a second. Calm down, will you, for a second?
I am calm. But these people.
Okay, but you're still talking. You're still talking. I put that comment up because I think it's important to highlight other people's thoughts on the matter. We are here to educate. We're not here to shout at people and tell people what to think.
Some people need to be shouted
at. What Danny's saying represents the thoughts and feelings of a lot of the fan base, and especially those who are singing it. You won't get people to stop singing it if they don't understand. Yes. So we are here to try and educate and shed light on the reasons as to why. So that comment is up there simply because there's worse comments I could have put up, which were ignorance. But I think Danny is probably coming from a good place. Maybe just doesn't understand why he said that it's not a homophobic chant because rent boys exist. So the whole reason we have this Pride week or month as it is now is to give people from the LGBT community a voice. And if they've made their voice heard and they're saying that it's a homophobic chant, we have to reflect on that, think about why, and stop. I mean, that's the whole idea. There was a time we probably all would have joined in and sang along with that chant, but now we like to think we're better people and we've been educated, and it's wrong. There was a time when we all behaved differently and our minds have been opened, that we challenged our thinking, and that's on every topic, you know. And yeah, social media, as bad as it is, one of the good things it has given people, the logical, rational people, a place to find other people from other minorities and to start to listen and to be educated. The worst thing we can do when it comes to a topic like this is to shout people down and shame and whatever else. Danny's comment is just representative of so many thousands of people. Look, we've seen it in the ground, and actually I didn't even realize that Kick It Out statement was made a couple of years ago, 2019, when we sang that song at something else. The first time I've seen this highlighted was this weekend. And when I seen it, I was like, what's wrong with that? And I went onto Twitter and I read articles, and now I understand that absolutely 100% that it's an unacceptable chant. But Danny's comments there is because maybe he hasn't come to terms with the fact that the LGBT community have said it's homophobic. They don't like it. And that's what we're all about is and all of these.
Maybe you're right, Andy. I shouldn't get annoyed, but ignorance, I have a problem with you. Well, Danny, just to, because Danny made a comment that he couldn't be educated. Okay, I'm going to make an attempt, Danny, and I'm not the expert. Obviously, I'm not a homosexual, and there are other homosexual, like there are great organizations who can educate you, Danny. But what I will say from speaking with them and from asking them the question is that the reason why it's a homophobic chant is it's about the directionality and the venom and the intention, the intent. So they've taken a situation. You're right, Danny. There are a great many things that exist. For example, rent boys do exist. But for example, I could go on the streets tomorrow. If say, for example, I was a different man, I was a professional footballer. I'd go on the streets tomorrow and I could find a female prostitute and I could do my business. It could be exposed. Very, very unlikely that it would be thrown at it'd be thrown at me in a football match, but it won't be thrown at everybody that supports Liverpool. When something it's been used as a slur. It's been used as a negative slur to slur homosexuals, to slur the gay community with something negative. Therefore, it qualifies as a homophobic chant. And Andy is right. You're probably a lovely, innocent man who doesn't think that homophobia exists. And I hope that you can reach out from the bottom of my heart, reach out to one of these organizations and ask them as gay people, because I'd be very surprised if you're gay, if you're making a statement like that, but ask some gay people what they constitute being homophobia. Perhaps they can educate, because you're probably right. When it comes to homophobia, I mightn't be the most qualified, but I guarantee that gay organizations, the LGBT plus community will be. So perhaps they can educate you. So ask them the question.
Steve-O, just in terms of the chance that are in the repertoire of Liverpool fans, all kinds of different fans. I mean, there's a hell of a lot out there which are offensive, yeah, on one level or another, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'll give you an example. One of my favourite chants, I'm just sense check now, I think it's still okay. I mean, I absolutely love singing United to United. Manchester is full of shit. I think that will still survive.
I think that's
certain lines, isn't there, that really you have to evaluate and you cannot cross.
Well, first and foremost, rent boys don't exist. Male sex workers exist. Rent boys, in its very essence, is a negative connotation and therefore shouldn't be used. So yes, male sex workers exist. Female sex workers exist. Just because they're homosexual sex workers doesn't mean they have to be called rent boys. Heterosexual sex workers get called gigolos and they're fucking glorified and they're legends and they're out banging women for money and it's fucking brilliant. But if you fucking do it with another bloke, then you're a rent boy and you're a dirty tosser and all those sort of things that get drawn with it. And this is you know, patriarchy, this is misogyny, this is a lack of education. Only a few weeks ago, we had a conversation around racism. 20 years ago, shouting monkey noises was banter. Now calling somebody a rent boy is banter. It's not banter. I had to call myself out on it. People will remember a couple of pods ago, admitting to my own racism on Twitter a few years back. It wasn't intentional racism at the time, but looking back now with reflection, it is easy to see how it was construed as racist, and I have to hold my hands up and did hold my hands up and accepted it and said that I was wrong. And absolutely, I don't think chants like that should be happening. I don't think we're constantly talking about how come there's no gay footballers? Of course there's gay footballers. Well, who's gay? Blah, blah. How is a footballer ever going to come out and say they're gay and be comfortable with it when people in the stands are shouting rent boys and other homophobic chants? It's never going to happen. And we need to accept that there's a percentage of gay footballers, and that's okay. So I won't get off onto a different tangent, but my point is any of these chants have to be taken for what they mean to the people they're being said towards. And you have to listen to what's hurting them. And why are people doing it? They're doing it because they're in a group of other lads and they think they're fucking cool if they shout it. And they think it gives them a higher place in the pecking order of the alpha male around them. And if they're the ones roaring at Billy Gilmore, they're the coolest of their crew. And that's the reality of a lack of education. This is what WhatsApp is all about. And people always ask me, but often it's said to me, oh, you're off social media. Well, why are you off WhatsApp? That's not social media. WhatsApp's a fucking cesspit of just this sort of shit getting sent around every group, shared. And this conversation would be had in tens of thousands of WhatsApp groups amongst bunches of lads who don't have any context. They won't have gay people in the group, or they won't be openly gay and having that conversation. If there's openly gay people in that conversation, that'll be a very different conversation to a group of what we believe to be heterosexual lads all shouting, sure, that's only a fucking laugh. You know, it's only slagging Chelsea fans. It's bollocks. It's hurtful to the people involved. It's hurtful to the player himself, you know, and there's no need for it. There's no need for it. You can have a laugh. You can chant for, like, some of the best things we do are chant for our own players rather than slag off the opposition fans. And I'm not saying sterilize football, but you don't have to sterilize football to take out massively offensive things from it. And we as a society should be looking to step away from the old way of doing things, which is to just mock anything that's really hurtful to a community. You know, you get the Heisel chant, you get the fucking bin dippers, you get the piss on the dead, you get the fucking unemployed chants, you get all of them. And Liverpool fans are up in arms over that. How dare people do this? We're a very fucking easy group of fans to flip it and play the why me card when it's thrown at us. But then it's just banter and crack when we're doing it to other people. And I've always said that about our fan base. You know, we've a way of looking at ourselves with rose-tinted glasses that few other fan bases have. And for me, it just needs to be eradicated. It's not just about us stopping the Chelsea Rent Boys chant. That's not what I'm saying needs to be eradicated. Fans need to sit up and listen to what is being said is hurtful. Manchester is full of shit is clearly just a jest at the city. And yes, you could say it offends everybody in Manchester. And if it comes out that it really does offend people rather than it just being a bullshit throwback comment, then maybe that shouldn't be said either. But there's a big difference between Manchester is full of shit and Chelsea Rent Boys, which is a connotation towards homosexuality, towards that whole area being soft little London South boys, and they're all, you know, gay. And that's what the connotation is. It's not about one player.
Can I just say,
you're absolutely right. But sorry, Andy, you're absolutely right. And you know what I love about the way you're framing it? It's not even about, because, you know, gay people aren't sensitive about being called gay. It's the disparaging nature of pointing at the homosexuality and tagging it with something that is perceived as, you know, lurid. You know, it's a lack of acceptance. It's a lack of tolerance. It's just horrible, to be honest. Mm. And don't get me wrong, guilty. You know, I ask my gay friends all the time, oh my God, you know, I prefer to ask the question. And like, I firmly believe he is without sin, you know, cast the fruits. I cannot say that I haven't heard that chanting and giggled and went, yeah, bloody Chelsea. Well, it has to start somewhere. I can't stand it. You know what I mean?
Pete, I'm looking at Ghost's comment there. Monkey noises has never been banter, especially in the stands. It's still banter in Poland. It's still banter in Hungary. They're all having a laugh and a joke about it over there, going, ah, these black lads, let's throw some fucking... Italy throwing bananas at players up to 3-4 years ago, probably last season.
This highlights you still have a problem. And look, there's two comments. There's a comment on the screen there and a comment I'm going to put up in a second. Talking about Manchester as you're full of shit and all, like, that, it's a totally different conversation. They're not a marginalized group of people. They're not discriminated against. So when it comes to stuff like this, it's marginalized groups. It's religions, race, and any other reason where people are suffering oppression. All these pride, they're highlighting the struggles of other people, and it's fucking, you're ignorant if you don't recognize that this is still happening. And as Sean says there is gay men, not just in Liverpool, but all over the world, being beaten up on the streets for no other reason other than their sexuality. So there's sad bastards out there who are prepared to physically assault someone and put someone in hospital just because of that. So all this stuff needs to carry on and continue. And people need to listen up, be educated, be open to education. I'm nearly sorry I put that comment up earlier on, because now he's continuing on to say, I can't be educated. It's just banter. It's blah, blah, blah. Seriously, fella.
It's young and middle-aged men that are the problem. Yeah. We have to accept that. There's no women out there bashing gay men, or you know, very few of them. So it's a male problem.
Just before I lose the comments.
Yeah, go on. Sorry, go on.
So Stan there, he said, fuck me, he loves this place, but it's just football banter. I'm an Irish potato picking, Scouse bin dipping, blue bin, C-O-N-T. Yeah, like, yeah, that's, come on. You know what I mean?
But Andy, I haven't personally.
What has any of that got to do with football, I would say?
Taking offense.
What has any of that got to do with football? Nothing. Look,
I used to tell people I couldn't be offended, and I used to that's just a defense mechanism. Stan has a defense mechanism there. So does every single person that says I can't be offended. You can be offended. You just, someone either hasn't found a way to say something that truly offends you, or you block out the offense by just pretending it deflects off you. And that's
stable.
Yeah.
Just there was a time though that maybe making a comment like that about Irish people might have been offensive, because there was a time when Irish people were marginalized in London. They weren't that, you know, the no dogs, no Irish thing, but we're long past that. So when people would still be offended by it. Yeah. When we get to a point where homosexual people are no longer being assaulted or discriminated against, or black people are no longer being racially abused or discriminated against, then maybe it's banter or the crack again. Yeah. Because like, I certainly don't mind being called an Irish potato muncher or whatever else, because I don't feel those
marginalized. You know, you're not marginalized because of it.
And you're not, you know, you're talking about white privilege.
And you know what, Andy, glad you let the record state that Andy Young was the first one to use the term white privilege on this show tonight, because it's an important thing. That's the most important thing you're going to say, Andy, because white privilege does two things. It shields you. It's not about having thick skin. It's about having a thick life from the consequence of being marginalized. And I'm so happy, Andy, that you said it. It's such an enlightened thing to say. Stan can say all of this he wants, but nobody is going to stop him on the street or stop him in a job interview and label any of these things and stop him from having a better life. However, openly gay footballers, if they were to be openly gay, I guarantee you the fear is there, and it's justified that their next contract is under threat, that some of the more enlightened managers would say, listen, we can't have the attention that this brings, so we don't want you at the club. These guys are terrified. Andy, I'm so happy, and thank you for saying that white privilege exists. So it's easy for people like Stan to say, I'm okay, because Stan is probably, you know, a middle-aged white guy who isn't affected by, you know, he could wear I'm a paddy potato picker, and no one's going to say anything to him. It's not going to marginalize him in any of the important things in society. However, homophobia is something that marginalizes people every single day, and I'm sorry, somebody needs to stand up for people and say, and stop telling gays what they should and shouldn't be offended by, and ask them what offends them.
I don't know, Ray, you've lived in England probably longer than any of us here. I know Pete's lived in England and says that Irish people get a rough ride in England, to be honest. I find when I'm in England, I just blend in with the crowd. Like, nobody looks at me any differently, but that's not the same for someone who's black or Asian or Muslim. They, you know, just by their presentation, they're marginalized. So you kind of get a free ride. You know what I mean?
It's different in the south of England compared to the north of England. The north of England, tons of people have Irish heritage. They've got grannies that were Irish. They've grown up with some semi-resemblance of an Irish background. They took holidays back to Ireland or whatever it might have been. It's very different down around London.
I don't know.
Would you agree with that, Ray?
Yeah. And even, to be honest with you, when I first entered the workforce, and, you know, I'm going back sort of 25 years or so now, you know, my first work was down in London, and even as a Scouser, I felt a little bit kind of almost, you know, that I had to work that bit harder to be recognized, you know, being surrounded by people, you know, who were born and bred in the South, you know, that there was almost a bit of an inferior, you know, whether it was right or wrong, yeah. I think there was a bit of an inferiority complex there. You know, you do, when you're not from, when you don't conform to the same standards of the people that are around you, you do feel a little bit like, you know, the microscope is on you, you know, that you're a bit of a fish out of water, whichever way you want to put it. I mean, you know, one of the comments here that I picked up on throughout this was Chris Brack's comment around women's football being ahead of men's football. You know, that there's openly gay footballers in the women's game, and there's no, you know, homophobic abuse being aimed at the players at games. And I think we've clearly got a lot to learn in terms of being tolerant in the men's game. And then there was another, you know, comment that came in from young lads saying, you know, it's very telling that there's no openly gay footballers, unfortunately, you know, and fair play for having this conversation, because it isn't an easy one. And let's face it, we've got Chelsea coming to Anfield in not too long. It's going to be very interesting as to whether, you know, this statement issued by the club and the awareness that's being put out there is going to have what we hope to be a positive impact and to stop this chant being, you know, sung again at Anfield in sort of 11, 12 days time. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think it's been a really healthy debate to have. As Steve-O says, you know, we touch on some difficult subjects here. It brings to the table some of our misgivings, some of our miseducation that we've had down the years on some of these things. And like Pete says, we put our hands up and we admit when we've been wrong on this show, and when we've done things that we don't feel proud of. And we may have felt it was appropriate at other times and in times in the past to say things. But I think the real sign of a person is to look at these arguments and actually come up and say, do you know what? We have to change with the times. This is not right. It's not right to be coming out with homophobic chants of football grounds any longer. And it's something that we need to stamp out of football, just as it is racism and other forms of abuse that marginalize people in society. So, look, any other closing comments on the subject?
Just to validate what we're saying, I wonder if the people talking have ever been to London. Ray, you lived in London and worked in London. P, you lived in London. You said at the start of the show, 6 years or something.
10 years. Yeah, I would have taken 7-8 trips to London a year with friends and family living there. I've actually been in workmen's clubs drinking down in Kilburn. I know a friend of mine was the Irish consulate for the London embassy, or for the embassy in London. So and one of our key districts was Kilburn. So I spent a lot of time in London over an 8 or 9 year period. What I'm saying is there is a higher population of a feeling of bond between northern cities like Manchester and Liverpool and Ireland than there is between. That's not to take away from the Irish community in London or other parts of southern England. That's not the intention. What I'm saying is naturally there is a stronger bond between the northwest of England and Ireland than there is in any other place within the UK. Just on one other comment, Ray, you mentioned that the men's game has a long way to catch up on the women's game. I suppose what we need to probably take into context there is that hetero men and men of this ilk, and somebody said you can't, sorry, two things I'm going to say. Somebody said you can't educate these people. You can, because I look at where I was at with my views on things literally 2 years ago, and they were all centered around my own insecurities, my own fears, and how I, within our own groups, within other groups of lads, I would try to be funny and create these comments on social media or whatever it might have been, just to get a reaction out of the people I was looking at, because I wanted to come across well. I wanted to be laughed with. I wanted all those things. That doesn't matter to me anymore. So what I did over the last couple of years was spent my time trying to educate myself around feminism, around LGBTQ, because I couldn't get my head around the trans side of things a couple of years ago. And I actually went and spent time trying to watch documentaries on it, trying to understand it a bit more. And I do feel I do now. I don't have it all figured out, but I'm definitely more accepting and more open and capable of understanding other people's viewpoints and how they feel about themselves. But to get back to the men's game and the women's game, what I'm saying here is heterosexual men aren't threatened by lesbians. They're often stimulated by them. They think it's this cool, sexy lesbian vibe. They are threatened by gay men. They feel it's a threat to their own heterosexuality. The amount of men out there that think gay men are immediately attracted to them, you're probably an ugly cunt to them the way you are an ugly cunt to women. So, that's the reality of it. You know, I've said that word again, Andy. There's your YouTube source again. Anyway, I'm okay with that. But what I'm saying is, it's not about the women's game being ahead of the men's game because of inclusion. It's down to fear. And these men are not fearing lesbians. They're fearing gay men. And that's where it stems from.
Just before we close, we got our first super chat. Thanks to Darren McCusker. He's a gay supporter. He's thanking us for discussing this topic. And I guess he's just saying, echoing what we're saying here, that people just need more knowledge. You know, Steve-O clearly there, being very open around what he's done over the last couple of years to educate himself. I think it's upon us all really to educate ourselves in terms of some of these, you know, topics that are difficult. And I think the more knowledge and the more education, then I think the better informed people will become. And in turn, I think the better choices people will make in terms of whether they sing these songs or not when they go to a football ground the next time they're there.
It's just about asking questions, really. I think I would encourage people to if you don't know something, instead of forming your own opinion, sticking by it, because we're all in WhatsApp groups and we all see people say, I don't need to read. I have my own opinion now. Don't do that. Read a book or ask someone, an organization, because, you know, the likes of Cop Out, which is a Liverpool group for the LGBT community, they will tell you straight out, you know, what they think and what their opinion is on the topic that's relevant to them. Ask the question. I think it's got to start from there.
More for actually has some great documentaries and informative material on it. If you have a VPN or something like that, and you can get onto More for and Vice is another one that has tons of really good material, really interesting stuff to watch. And you know what? There's a human element to all of this. There's humans behind all of this. And when you actually watch a couple of documentaries and see people's actual stories and what they've had to go through growing up, or the fight that they've had internally with themselves to accept that they themselves are gay, or to be accepted by their families, or to be accepted by a community, or trans, or whatever it may be. When you start to see the human element of it, you really can get beyond your own prejudice and your own feelings on things, and you strip out all the bullshit and just see one human and another human, and it makes it much easier to understand once you see the human element of it.
Yeah, look, I think when you don't understand something, it's time to just shut your mouth and listen, and that's what it's all about. Just on Dara's comment there, thanks for the super chat. In case anyone in the comments are listening to the show doesn't know, those super chats are going to Sienna at this stage. If you don't know, I'll tell you, Sienna needs life-changing surgery over in the US. She's been offered a place in the hospital in November. They're still about 50, 60 grand short of their what they need. So every €5 in super chats counts. Anyone, it's going across the bottom there. You can go to the GoFundMe page, you can donate, you can do what you want. Just a big push now for the last few months to try and get Sienna to where she needs to be. It's a difficult thing that Sienna's family have been going through to try and get this money raised, but with everybody's help, I'm sure they'll get there. So thanks again, Dara.
Yep. So look, it is, we're coming up to the 2 hour mark. It's coming up to midnight for most of us, 1 a.m. for Pete. Appreciate Pete staying on these things so late. It's been another great show. Someone did say earlier, if another one of those ambulances went past Pete's window, we're definitely winning the league. Well, I've seen about 15 of them.
I was thinking to myself, it must be some high crime rate or there's a lot of sick people around there, one or the other, because there's fucking something going on.
Unfortunately, COVID is, you know yourself. Sad.
Yeah.
So we're definitely winning the league based on the amount of ambulance act.
The phone is back.
Right, so thanks Andy, thanks Pete, thanks Steve-O.
I'm sure
you'll be seeing everyone on a show sometime soon. We'll have the usual kind of shows coming up this week. No doubt Jamie will be around for his midweek fix. I'm sure we'll see Gav this week. Keith might be back from holiday in Spain, so we might see Keith appearing on some shows this week. I'm sure we'll have another watch along coming up. Was it Bracky who did the watch along? On Saturday? I think it was. I think there's another watch along due for the Burnley game on Saturday. I'll be there. I'll be in the ground.
You'll be live streaming from the cop, Ray.
Yeah, I'll be...
best of luck getting a fucking signal there.
So, quick predictions for Saturday. Andy?
2-0.
2-0 Reds. Pete?
No, 3-1 again. Well,
3-1 Reds. 3-1 Reds. Steve-O?
Yeah, 2-0 for me as well. That's what I was thinking.
2-0. I'm going to go with 3-0. 3-0 to Liverpool. Two consecutive clean sheets. So, that is a trip. We will see you next week for another topic action-packed show. Sports Social Podcast Network.